You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We're in the second hour of this live broadcast. Big hello to everybody in the TNT chat room. Great to see you guys in there. Great to see the numbers building, especially in the last week. Great to see everybody. I see some of the usual suspects knocking around. That's where you want to be during the program. You can access the TNT chat community on the mobile app. You can download that, of course, on Google Play or the App Store with Apple, and you can access that plus all of the content. And it's a great thing to have also to pipe through to your car stereo. If you're driving, you can do all that with the Bluetooth connection. And also on the URL, tntradio.live, lower right-hand corner, red bubble. That's the chat room. Just log in, stay logged in, and away you go. It's a great community there. That's where you want to be during the live broadcast. And during this hour, we're going to be connecting with a couple of great guests. I'm looking forward to speaking to U.S. Attorney Gerard Felitti about the FISA bill, which was extended recently by Mike Johnson and co. in the Congress. There's plenty of senators and congressmen who they're not that serious about constitutional rights or the Bill of Rights. That's what it seems like to the layperson. But I guess they have their reasons on Capitol Hill. They have access to all sorts of intelligence and Jack Bauer 24 ticking bomb scenarios and all sorts of other things that they show them when they're in the SCIF. The secure compartmentalized intelligence facility, the SCIF. That's when they show them all the scary stuff, and that's when they rubber stamp all the authoritarian legislation after that. Interesting how that whole sort of equation works. We'll talk to our next guests about that. Also, Hesher, a.k.a. Brian McClain, host of State of the Nation here on TNT, is going to join us also this hour to talk about Mike Johnson and that new aid package for Ukraine. Everyone's got a chance to have a look at that. That's going to get approved probably over the weekend. I think there's going to have severe ramifications for some of the Republicans, I think, that are not true to their word in terms of what they promised and what we're getting when they ousted the last speaker, Kevin McCarthy. I want to talk to Hesher about that. Kind of an important story, very timely, of course, now that the whole Ukraine project is a total busted flush. Why don't we just throw another 20 or 30 billion towards Zelensky and keep him into party mode for, you know what, the next year? So when are they going to have elections in Ukraine? I think they should give him the money and say hold elections in June. How about that? Nope, they can't do that. That's going to be against our democratic principles in the new Ukraine. Interesting, isn't it, how all that shapes up? Anyway, some interesting stories afoot. Surprise, surprise. Israel has intervened to stop a UN query into the events of October 7th. Ladies and gentlemen, isn't that interesting? Why would Israel want to block a UN investigation into October 7th? What could possibly be afoot there? I can't quite imagine why they would do that. I mean, what does Israel have to hide in? Because we're told every day, every waking hour, that they're victims of the most horrific attack since the Holocaust in World War II. So why would they want to stop the UN? Could it be, pray tell, could it be that some of the claims made by the regime in Israel weren't in fact true, that were fabricated by the government, by Netanyahu himself, repeated by Joe Biden, used to justify an ongoing genocide in Gaza? Could it be 40 beheaded babies? There's no evidence. These are, you know, totally fabricated, baseless claims. How about mass rape by Hamas? That one New York Times story they've had to now retract, and I think they got rid of the author, and now it's a huge scandal at the New York Times. Mass rape. It didn't happen, apparently. There's no evidence of it. So anyway, but we're told, oh, there's videos circulating. I got told this on X Twitter today by someone in the comment threads. You haven't seen the videos, Patrick. We've seen the videos. The videos are circulating. The secret videos are circulating. We've seen them. All these things are true. Why aren't they available to the press? Does anybody have an answer for that? No, they're just secret videos are circulating, ergo, all outrageous, outlandish claims are true. That's what we're led to believe. I mean, this is the biggest gaslighting operation. In fact, this trumps WMDs in Iraq. Okay, this is a total gaslighting operation. They're basically saying, look over here, take all this emotion, take all this hysteria and focus on that, but don't look over there because there's a void over there. There's no evidence over there. So this is pretty incredible. So this is historic. So yeah, they're blocking an independent UN inquiry into the events of October 7th. I wish we had an independent inquiry into the events of 9/11. I wish that would have been allowed, an independent investigation, but no, that wasn't allowed to happen. And how about 7/7? How about 7/7 in London? You remember that? 7/7? What was that, July 7th, 2005? Did I get the date right? The so-called Al-Qaeda attack on London, 7/7? What about that? Nope. Tony Blair said at the time, we don't want to investigate this. We need to move on. Let's move on. Let's let bygones be bygones. Sweep that one under the rug. The nation needs to move on. That's always a good sort of rallying cry to bury an investigation. Anyway, who knows what they would have found? Well, we know what they would have found because we watched Ripple Effect, 7/7 Ripple Effect. Great documentary. That's what you'd find if you did an independent investigation into 7/7. I'm just saying those are the facts. But be that as it may, another interesting thing that is directly connected to that story is that Qatar is now admitting that ceasefire talks are now in a, quote, delicate phase. In other words, they're no closer to a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas than they are or than they were last month. That's a pretty much a failure on every single conceivable level. What does that tell us, folks? It tells us that Israel's not interested in a ceasefire. And they're going to say, and again, get the gaslights out. Get the gaslights out and turn them up all the way. So they're going to say, why doesn't Hamas just release the hostages? And then Hamas is saying something, but you don't get to hear it in the media. What Hamas has said, which doesn't get reported in the press, is that Israel needs to release all of its hostages. And so apparently Hamas is holding between 120 and 130 remaining Israeli hostages from October 7th. Correct me if I got the numbers wrong there. Guesstimate, okay? 120 to 130. How many is Israel? How many hostages and detainees do they have? We're told in excess of 7,000, including hundreds of children and women, hundreds arrested without charge for no reason in a gulag somewhere. And they're doing God knows what to these people, why they have them incarcerated. We've read the reports in the Israeli press. We've read the reports of mass abuse, sexual abuse of detainees. Year in on year out, these are the reports in the Israeli press of what Israel does to its detainees. So listen, folks, it's a really horrific situation that could be diffused very easily if both sides basically did a deal. Unfortunately, that's not happening now. So we're going to get more fighting, more war, and we're not going to be any closer to where everyone needs to be, which is to hit the brakes on this situation, wind it down, and get back to some level of normality in terms of international relations. That's what we're hoping for, and we hope that everybody else is well. Let's take a break right now with the network, and when we come back, we're going to talk about another breaking story in the United States. The FISA bill has been renewed. The question is why, and what exactly is this bill? We'll find out from our next guest on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
There was already lines being drawn in the sand because there was people resisting every step of the way. I was one of them. I was resisting the mask, and I was like questioning that openly on social media, and old friends were going like, you know, calling me an idiot and all this other stuff.
The data coming out of Israel showing that there was basically no efficacy with this vaccine, with the Delta variant. And so we knew what was coming. And at that point, we thought that the health agencies were actually going to try to be honest with the public and say, okay, the vaccines actually didn't work. We've got this new variant, you know, and try to maneuver out of it, which would then open up the door a little bit for the mainstream to go, oh, there's people being harmed. We've got some problems here. Okay, let's start talking about this. But instead, what they did is they doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down on their narrative, as you saw, and they fueled this all-out war against the people like yourself who were awake. They saw the BS coming from a mile away, and they were just asking questions.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. We're in the second hour of this live broadcast. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Thank you for rejoining us. And over to the United States, kind of an important story, and it is very emblematic of a sort of problem that we've been flagging up in Washington. We're looking at the encroachment of authoritarian powers, unconstitutional legislation, all of the things that, well, definitely we've seen members of the Republican Party fighting tooth and nail over the years to try to roll back the Freedom Caucus, of course, but somehow recently we've seen a joint bipartisan effort to extend a piece of legislation a lot of people are opposing. It has to do with FISA warrants and warrantless wiretapping. I want to welcome on to the program an American attorney, Gerard Felitti, senior counsel at the Lawfare Project, to talk about this important subject. Welcome to the program, Gerard.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, first of all, Gerard, I mean, this was something that received all kinds of attention over the last couple of years, namely for its role in the whole Crossfire Hurricane investigation. It's hugely controversial. A lot of Americans rejected this out of hand at the time, and a lot of people believed that this would be mothballed and literally sent out to pasture. But somehow new life has been breathed into this FISA bill. And can you explain to us exactly what it is and what powers does it give the federal agencies?
Well, when we're talking about what Congress, who you authorized it for, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, we're looking specifically at something called Section 702. Section 702 was designed to allow American law enforcement and intelligence agencies to collect information on non-Americans overseas. And that is a very valid thing. We want our intelligence agencies to be able to do that. We want the CIA to catch the next bin Laden and listen in on his conversations. The problem is that in talking, in surveilling foreigners, sometimes, perhaps often, you also capture the conversations that American citizens in the U.S. are having with people who are suspected of perhaps being bad actors overseas. And the real issue is whether the FBI and other agencies can access those records that include conversations that Americans have in the U.S. without a warrant. FISA, Section 702, says they don't need a warrant. They can just run a search. And this is where we have Crossfire Hurricane. This is where we had, you know, searches of Donald Trump's campaign staff in 2016. This is what the problem with FISA is, because the FBI has abused its powers and accessed that database impermissibly. So now when we're talking about renewal, the issue is under what circumstances, if at all?
And this is how I think Mike Flynn was snared with the Russian ambassador. They were surveilling him, Kislyak, I believe his name was. And Michael Flynn was incidental communications because he was in that orbit. But it's not just they can surveil one or two steps away from the target as well. There's ancillary connections that are included in that net. So it's not only the target, is it?
Correct. And that's exactly the problem, because Mike Flynn, once you see his, when someone at the FBI or another intelligence agency sees his name in the conversation, then they just go into the database and see who else he's talking to. So then you're no longer talking about foreign intelligence, you're talking about domestic espionage and our own citizens. And again, that's where the problem is. So one of the things that was proposed, what Republicans in the Judiciary Committee, for example, were pushing for as a compromise, was to have a warrant requirement. If you want to look up the data for an American, you have to go to court and get a warrant. That's not what's in FISA now. And unfortunately, that's also not what was just passed by the House.
Yeah, I mean, it's already been proven that it can be abused. And if let's say the agency is politicized, or actors within a federal agency are politicized, and we only have to look at the FBI agent, I believe his name was Kleinsmith, was implicated in I believe forging some part or faking some part of a FISA warrant in order to kind of get it through. And I don't know what happened to him, if he was really held accountable for that or not. But that would have been the real alarm that should have went off at that point, that's about the worst possible scenario you can have in a place like the FBI, is that level of abuse. And it looked like it was politically motivated. How dangerous is that when you're talking about campaigns, you're talking about election cycles? Is that not election interference?
Oh, that's very dangerous. And quite frankly, it's hard to trust the FBI after what we've seen them do for so many years now. Unfortunately, they used to be the preeminent law enforcement authority in America, but now they're in disrepute because there have been so many issues, so many legal violations, and no one has ever really faced consequences. They don't fire people. They don't reassign people. They don't send people to jail for breaking the law. They just bury it under the rug. And this has a terrific problem, a risk of being abused. Now, you know, in the U.S., there's PIs, private investigators, used to make a living by having a friend at the DMV who would run a record for them. And now it's the FBI. You know, you every politician has a friend at the FBI who will run a record for them and do this warrantless illegal search, and nothing ever happens. So it's a very big risk. And this is why, you know, we need to cap how this program is used, if at all.
Now, a lot of people think, Gerard, and I'm not asking you to agree or disagree on this, but there are a lot of people who believe that there was political will to kill this particular piece of legislation, or at least not rubber stamp it or give it an extension. But then Speaker of the House Mike Johnson was given a special intelligence briefing in a SCIF, a secure compartmentalized intelligence facility. And when he came out, he had this to say to the press. We've got this clip. I want to roll this. I want to get your reaction to this, Gerard, what you thought about this. Go ahead and roll this clip.
When I was a member of the judiciary, I saw all the abuses of the FBI, the terrible abuses over and over and over, the hundreds of thousands of abuses. And then when I became speaker, I went to the SCIF and got the confidential briefing from sort of the other perspective on that, to understand the necessity of Section 702 of FISA and how important it is for national security. And it gave me a different perspective. So I encourage all the members to go to the classified briefing and hear all that and see it so they can evaluate the situation for themselves. And I think some opinions have changed both ways, but that's part of the process. You got to be fully informed.
Have you been informed?
So right there, Gerard, it was that sort of, he's been shown the Jack Bauer ticking bomb scenario in the intelligence briefing and has had a Damascene conversion on Section 702 of the FISA bill. What's your reaction to that?
My reaction to that is I've been on both sides of this. So I do get that there, you know, intelligence agencies need that flexibility. And we do live in a time when we just saw last weekend Iran shooting rockets all over the Middle East. And we do live in a time when we are under more risk than ever that we will be drawn into a foreign war. So we do need to know what's going on. Flip side is having a warrant requirement for when you're looking up secondary or tertiary information, that shouldn't be that hard of a stretch. Judges are fast on things like that. It's a little procedural step that guarantees our civil rights and doesn't really impede the investigative process. So I get what he's saying. I think that he does have a point of the need for 702. I agree with that. But you still need procedural safeguards. You still need to have a warrant. Otherwise, what's the point of our Constitution?
Yeah, I mean, you're making a nuanced point. You're basically saying, you know, we understand the big ticket items, the big security threats, but then you're trying to separate that to protect the rights of ordinary Americans that, let's face it, there's no evidence that they're guilty of any crime per se. It's incidental communication. Certainly, they should be able to make that separation, to make that distinction. But in politics, we're seeing more and more of this, Gerard, this kind of polarization, all or nothing approach to pretty much everything, especially in the legislative theater. I know that politics is dividing Washington, but even on this particular issue, certainly that would have been a reasonable distinction, but yet it's not being made. And that's quite puzzling, or isn't it? What do you think?
I think that right now we see what's going on, the bigger picture domestically, if we will, the campaign between Joe Biden and Donald Trump and the tactics that are being used against Trump. And that is taking the oxygen out of rational thought on smaller, and I use air quotes here, smaller items like a Foreign Intelligence Act. Because everything has become polarized from the top down, there isn't enough bandwidth to look into all of these aspects. Every day you're dealing with new attacks on democracy, lawfare against candidates, criminal trials that shouldn't be taking place, that when you get into the weeds, you don't have time for that. So I think that's part of the issue. Congress is distracted by other issues right now, and they just don't have the bandwidth to delve into this.
There are people that believe, Gerard, that once the executive branch or once central government basically gathers a certain amount of power, that they're very reluctant to relinquish that from government to government. And that's the sort of slow creep that a lot of people, like, say, the more constitutionally minded commentators and the Thomas Masseys of the world, that's the argument that they're making constantly. And that's the big concern, because it doesn't matter. Well, I don't think it matters who's in power from one administration to the next. Those are centralized authoritarian big government powers, and any government's going to want to use them.
Any government's going to want to use them, and it's a system that perpetuates itself, because we're talking not about a political entity or a politicization, we're talking about bureaucratization. You've developed an identity for these agencies where they just perpetuate the same beliefs. So you're hired, you share the belief of the person who hired you. You go up in rank, you stay there for 20 years, and you're more likely than not going to hire people who think just like you. So after a period of time, you have this groupthink at these agencies. And when this groupthink started under certain administrations, the lean is one way. It's authoritarian. It's more, we can do what we need to do to safeguard America, civil rights be damned. So I think it's a problem that the system perpetuates itself.
And we got a couple of minutes left, and appreciate your time, Gerard, but there's another important issue. It's actually in the title of your organization. What we have seen in the last year is really enough to make your head spin, even by Central American Banana Republic standards. The lawfare that has been deployed against the GOP frontrunner is pretty unbelievable. I mean, it's kind of obvious they've lined all these cases up right during the election cycle. And this is the ostensibly some of the same people that were screaming election interference for the last 8 years. And this is, to me, a great example of election interference, of election meddling, trying to keep the presumptive nominee, the Republican Party for president, off the ballot, or just knock him out of the race completely. This is unbelievable. I don't know. It's sunk in for a lot of people I know of what they're. This is historic. But I want to get your thoughts on this before we break. But go ahead.
This is historic to see this happening to the former president of the United States, who is more or less the front runner in the race to win the White House in November. We've seen this, the legal system being abused many times over the years. But look at New York City. You've got an act that was not illegal, paying money for a settlement, paying money to your lawyer for a settlement, and all of a sudden you're facing criminal charges for falsifying records. And you have to be in court 4 days a week. You can't go on the campaign trail. You can't do other things. You have to sit in that courtroom for months at a time, be completely distracted, pay millions of dollars to your lawyers, and still risk losing and ending up in jail or having other disqualifying offenses. That's lawfare. You silence someone by abusing the law to bring fraudulent charges or even just to harass them. And that's what we're seeing now in New York and in other jurisdictions targeting Donald Trump. And it's scary, because if the president of the United States, Donald Trump, a billionaire with all these assets, has to deal with it, how about the ordinary guy? How about you and me? What happens when that system is turned against us?
What do you think Donald Trump's prospects are in overcoming a lot of these obstacles? He's done very well so far to get this far. A lot of people are surprised he's gotten this far. What's your kind of assessment going forward in the next, right before November? What do you think?
I think that he will continue to do well. I know that the conventional wisdom in New York is, oh, it's everyone's Biden. He's not going to get a decent jury. I don't really agree with that because New Yorkers are contrarians. That's my hometown, and we don't always do what's expected of us. And people like to think things through. And when you think, wait a second, there's no evidence for any of this, I don't think he's actually going to be found guilty. But it's still a waste of time and a waste of resources. And the other cases are equally ridiculous. So I think ultimately, whether it's through the Supreme Court, through appeals, or jurors doing the right thing, I think he's going to end up fine. But it's going to take time, and it's a massive distraction.
Yeah, this is really the strangest general election cycle of anybody's living memory. Everyone I've talked to in politics, they just can't believe this is going on. It doesn't feel like a general election with all of this happening. But listen, we really appreciate you coming on. Gerard Folletti, senior counsel for the Lawfare Project. Thank you very much for joining us on TNT this week.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. A lot to think about there. We're still going to revisit this subject in future programs. Let's take a break, however. And when we come back, we're going to connect our next guest. Looking forward to talking to Brian McLean, a.k.a. Hesher, host of State of the Nation. Continue this conversation about Mike Johnson and the Ukraine project. What's happening? We're going to throw more money at Zelensky. Let's talk to Hesher about it in just a minute.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts. Reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Protecting. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. The Nonprofit Alliance.
This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, folks, welcome back. Final segment, final hour of this live broadcast here on TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Thank you for rejoining us, and great conversation. It's great to get a professional opinion on some of these stories, especially the FISA bill and also the Lawfare issue. These are two things that, to me, are a big black mark right now on the U.S. politics. Gerard Folletti, attorney, senior counsel of the Lawfare Project. We'll look more on this topic in the coming weeks. I'm sure it's going to become more relevant, especially during the presidential election cycle. Let me welcome onto the program, however, a great friend of the show, also the host or co-host, if you will, of State of the Nation on TNT, Today's News Talk, which airs immediately after our program here. Hesher, a.k.a. Brian McLean, or Brian McLean, a.k.a. Hesher, joining us right now. How you doing?
Very good. Good to see you, Patrick. I feel like I haven't been on your show in quite a while. Back in the early days, I was sort of the 2A and Daily Shooter correspondent here, but it's great to be back with you.
Yeah, you're the domestic violence correspondent there early on in the TNT early days, because there were a lot of mass shootings and things happening. So it seemed like every couple of weeks we had to have a powwow to try to pick apart what the hell was going on. It's been quiet on the mass shooting front, luckily, in America, but we got plenty of war overseas. to compensate for that. One of the things that has come up recently, and we joke about Ukraine and throwing all the money away there down the sort of proverbial toilet that is Kiev, but that hasn't slowed the U.S. legislature, hasn't slowed Republicans or Democrats, hasn't slowed them down in finding new ways to pipe money over to Zelensky. And this is coming at a time when everybody is kind of admitting now, you're seeing all the pieces now, you're starting to see the think pieces in like Politico or in some of these other journals, we've lost the war. Even the Council on Foreign Relations is writing like commiseration pieces now. We've lost the Ukraine war. Even though everybody seems to be saying that, Hesher, they're still planning this huge package for Ukraine, which somehow, by hook or crook, looks like it's going to make it through Congress. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's insane, you know. I mean, it's hard to get good numbers, but the last time I saw numbers that I felt, you know, resonated, it was over 500,000 Ukrainian men and boys deleted from the planet. And it's like, what would stop this? How do we stop this? Because clearly we've sent hundreds of billions of dollars and countless munitions, ammo, plate carriers, nerfed tanks, all kinds of stuff over there. And we're not seeing any good news, you know. And, you know, when I say good news, I'm saying, you know, the mainstream is not able to provide anything that supports any sort of inkling that all of this money and all of these death machines that we've sent over there are helping. They don't want to tell us that over 500,000 people have been killed in that conflict, and they want to keep sending money. And this is one of those things that really should cause some dissonance for people all over the West. Where's the success? What is the metric for success? Is the metric to just keep piling more money and more munitions on little green man over there in Ukraine? Or can you give us something? You know, we don't see any footage. I mean, not in the mainstream. You can go to my Telegram accounts and I can see trench warfare, drone warfare, bayonet warfare, things that you would have thought, you know, things that in the 90s, we probably would have, we're not going that direction anymore as a society. You know, in the 90s, it kind of felt like, well, you know, we've got all these black bag operations, but we could probably trust that there's nothing shady going on there, right? Wink. But no, it just got worse. And now it's like, we're just going to keep sending money. And, you know, over the 2 years or so, most conservatives went from tacitly or openly supporting this conflict to saying, no, this is a waste of our money. And that, I think, is causing some dissonance for people that want to see money go to Israel right now, because, you know, it's like on the, they have to admit that on the one hand, they're saying, yeah, no more money for Ukraine, too many people get killed. But yeah, we have plenty of money for Israel, you know, where they're doing ethnic cleansing. So it's really caused a bit of a heavy state of dissonance, I would think, for a lot of people.
The crazy thing about this is, it's only been like 2.5 months since they passed the last $95 billion aid package that had $60 billion for Ukraine and $14 billion for Israel. So that, it's only been a couple of months. It's almost like if we just, you know, if the taps slow down, somehow people are panicking, oh, they're not going to win this war, or we're going to be letting our allies down. So Speaker Johnson has come up with the solution. Rather than the sort of omnibus route, they're going for sort of separate votes on proposed aid for Ukraine. Then they'll have another session for Israel, and then another one for Taiwan. That's the third front that some people would like to spin up into a conflict zone. So that's an interesting approach to try to get around this. Then you have them basically tacking some of this stuff with other aid and so forth. I know this sort of, you know, banned TikTok bill, that looks like it's packaged up in all of this. And so, like, I'm looking at all this and I'm thinking, well, so how much of this has to do with just pure political posturing? And how much of it has to do with a genuine belief that there's any sort of, you know, strategic objective on the other end. Okay, I can see with Israel, it's kind of hot and heavy right now for Washington, their greatest ally, their greatest friend. They don't want to leave them in the lurch. But Ukraine, I really don't see how this is going to be productive. It's almost like the easiest thing to do for everybody would be to cut their losses, but everybody is so heavily invested, Hesher, in this in Washington, it's almost like they can't. So then you have this zombie scenario where they're just going to be keeping it like on life support system, or, you know, the reanimator for the next 8 months. I guess it's to get to the election, right? Is that the finish line, November, or is this going to go into 2025?
Well, November is a big question mark. This could go a number of different ways that could kind of change that answer. But it's definitely going to affect the election. I'm curious if any political or geopolitical event would actually change the outcome of the election. You know, we've been looking at these elections for quite some time now, and the vulnerability and threat vectors within that entire machinery, every single piece of it is questionable at best. So, you know, I'm starting to wonder if the election is not going to be a foregone conclusion. But yeah, it's weird too, because I remember when they were talking about this before, you know, a lot of conservatives were basically saying, no more omnibus bills for multiple countries. We're not going to do that. If you want to put them on the table separately, go for it. We'll likely, you know, not vote for more Ukraine money. And look, here they are. They got a new speaker. They've done exactly that. And it looks like after Johnson's trip to the SCIF, which I forget if it was Edward Snowden or Matt Gaetz that called it the haunted house. You come out of the haunted house and all of a sudden you've got information that other people don't have. I heard you talking about this earlier in the show, and all of a sudden you're just another one of those voices parroting, well, there's secret information I can't tell you about, but you have to trust me. This is the right thing to do. And now people are calling for him to step down. So, you know, it's a really bad look, and it's amazing that people can remain conservative, you know, with that label, or remain Republican. When the Republican House, I mean, they have the majority. That was the one thing that conservatives and Republicans gained in 2022 in that midterm election was that majority. And what has it done for us? They've reinvigorated FISA. I just heard you and Gerard talking about that. That is a huge crime, huge unconstitutional move. They're going to continue sending tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars along to other countries for shady wars that, you know, most people in the West don't even understand or want or support. And all the while, crime is rising, destitution is rising, homelessness has just gone absolutely insane. And you think about the money that they've shipped to these foreign countries and what it could do here domestically if it was applied domestically. And then you think about what Blake Lovewell said yesterday on your show about the GDP and the debt, and it's almost just like, wow, this really all does fit into that theory that, you know, globalism and World Economic Forum policies are really what are at play here, and we're trying to start and foment as many ongoing conflicts as we can and destroy our own economy, because that's what a lot of people think is happening.
Yeah, it's funny. They're also floating some of these Russian stories, I noticed, just as the funding package is due to be, you know, confirmed. One of them came out in the Washington Post. Secret Russian foreign policy document urges action to weaken the United States. Plans are afoot by the Russians to weaken its Western adversaries. They're looking for weak points in their Western adversaries. I'm looking, of course, in the fine print of this Washington Post big exclusive today, and it's actually referencing documents that were obtained last year, a year ago. So big breaking news. Anyway, from Germany. So yeah, all the fear-mongering is coming now. They want to get these appropriations confirmed, get these billions of dollars earmarked. And like, what is this at the end of the day, Hesher? It's deficit spending at the end of the day. hey, let's just run up the deficit. What is it now? $1 trillion per quarter? All this stuff just has dollar amounts attached to it. It's just deficit spending. So, and what do you get with deficit spending? Inflation, right? Debasing of the currency, inflation. What do we have? Inflation. That's what's happening. It's pure and simple. So this stuff does cost, but it doesn't cost them. It costs us. They get inflation adjusted wages in Washington. We don't. They don't have to worry about expenses because that's all covered. We don't. And so the public bears the brunt of all of this extravagant spending. So that seems to me like the big problem here. And we've been banging our heads against the wall in this argument for a very, very long time. And it's so funny, Hesher, I'll get your comments on this. They're always campaigning on this stuff. Oh, I'm, you know, the swamp. Oh, this is what they do in the swamp. We got to clean up the swamp. We got to flush all this stuff out. And you get these guys in. So the difference between Speaker McCarthy and Speaker Johnson is Speaker Johnson's not wearing the Ukrainian handkerchief and the lapel pin. Johnson's not wearing that. But the policies are pretty much identical from what I can see. So am I wrong here? I don't know.
No, you're right. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, that clip that you played previously when Gerard was with you. It's almost like that statement, that clip is supposed to be enough for Americans to say, oh, okay, all right, I'll go with more of this. But it's not. It's not enough. You know, I mean, we've got Edward Snowden pointing out on his X.com account, hey, this is awful. This is terrible. You know, this is one of the worst things you can do. And also, you know, the other thing that the 118th did is I'm paraphrasing and going from memory here. Somebody can fact check me in the chat room if you want, but it's my understanding that in this FISA renewal, they gave themselves, clearance from that. Like they're not, you can't go after people inside of Congress with 702.
Oh yeah, yeah. They get warning. They get warning if there's any warrant raised or any red flag raised about any of their communications, and they get to see exactly what it is. So again, rules for thee and rules for me, not the same. So yeah, clearly that is another example of the double standard there, Hesher.
Yeah. It's like when they Gavin Newsom or, you know, some of these other governors, they say, well, you know, we're going to ban assault rifles. Yet they're walking around with four SUVs packed with assault rifles and operators. You know, it's like it's real easy to say that for everyone else when you don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. And they're sending more than assault rifles to Ukraine, by the way, if it's about weapons of war, folks, Washington's sending plenty of those to destroy the country of Ukraine, to attack Russia, to push the world to the brink of World War III. That's perfectly fine and perfectly okay. And we have, you know, billions allocated for that. But, you know, bump stocks and, rifles and long guns, those are weapons of war in America. Must ban those.
Now, I'll tell you what a weapon of war is, Patrick. A weapon of war is something like the JDAM, a 2,000-pound bomb. That is a weapon of war. That is what we should look at as a modern weapon of war, or an Abrams tank, perhaps, or, I don't know, M249s. So we could go on and then get into some gray zone about, you know, small munitions that are destructive, but are they actually weapons of war if they've been legal in this country for a long time? I mean, you can't, comparing a Armalite rifle, you know, a 5.56 Armalite rifle, to something like a 2,000-pound bomb is laughable. It's ludicrous. You know, anyone who's like a veteran, a soldier, armed citizen, they know the difference. I mean, it's really for the brainwashed to use this weapons of war thing. But you make a great point. They certainly don't point out how many pallets of JDAMs they're sending over to Israel right now to drop in Gaza, where I'm trying to figure out what their weapons of war are. I'm pretty sure all they have, if they're lucky, are sticks, stones, and maybe some Kalashnikovs.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, dropping a few hundred JDAMs on densely populated residential areas in Gaza is just as dangerous as somebody walking in with an AR-15 into a school. I would think it's at least equal, deserves at least equal outrage and emotional indignation. Definitely those two scenarios should be at least equal. Someone tell that to the news desk at CNN. They're starting to figure it out, though, after 6 months. You got to give them credit. They're starting to run a little bit of coverage on this stuff now. But how many lives would have been saved if they would have reacted like that in the early weeks following the October 7th event? Who knows how many lives would have been saved? That's the point. So it's pretty incredible. I want to get your thoughts on, just in general, have you been following the conflict in Ukraine? And what are your sort of general thoughts now? We're past the 2-year mark on this, and apparently we're still told by some people that the Ukrainians are brave and they're motivated and they're willing to fight those Russians. So we need to keep arming them. We need to keep giving them weapons to hit those Russians, to hurt the Russians. What do you think about this situation right now, based on what you've observed?
It's pretty horrific, you know. Quite frankly, it's a bit of a horror, and it's almost like America and, you know, NATO allies are enabling a kind of genocide on the battlefield of, you know, what is ostensibly our ally. It's like that country's supposed to be our ally, right? I mean, obviously, there's so much stagecraft, and, you know, Zelensky is a joke, you know, a joker, a literal comedian. And in the way that, you know, he was groomed for that television show funded by Kolomensky and then put in the presidency after Maidan, it's like that alone should be enough for Americans to not support sending all this money and weaponry there. Like, if they're really our allies, we would be, I would think, if that was really an ally country instead of a place, you know, that's being used as a geopolitical chess piece, then America would be looking for ways to de-escalate the conflict there. But we know that's not what they're doing or what they want to do, because what was that, last year, there was a moment where there was that opportunity. And Boris Johnson, I don't know if he parachuted in or landed in at C-130, probably an American C-130, but he went in and
fell out of the plane drunk maybe.
With his UK flags, you know? And, but he stopped that. And now it's like, what was the death toll then? What is the death toll now? You know, it's a massive hit to Ukraine. And it's like, if they were truly our allies, we wouldn't be giving them bad military advice, starting coups in their country, you know, standing by and not reporting it when they, you know, shut down political parties, shut down elections, close churches, tell people what language they can speak and what they can't, go into other countries and conscript people that had, you know, moved there or fled there. You know, all these activities are not the activities of a democratic country. And, you know, I think that is really frustrating to a lot of Americans. And apparently that's something that, you know, even conservatives can agree upon pretty much, you know, throughout the country, although that's obviously not the case with the Israel conflict. But with Ukraine, you know, we can pretty much stand shoulder to shoulder again. It was so weird. It was like, you know, we had COVID, we had Ukraine, we had lawfare, and conservatives, independents, libertarians, center right, center left. We were all kind of like gathering shoulder to shoulder on these things. And then October 7 happens, propaganda starts flying in, JDAMs start flying out, and all of a sudden there's a fracture in the system again. And it's even working on the Democrat side. You may have seen AOC's recent comments, but, you know, it's like Democrat political actors are being, you know, given the talking points that, you know, will enrage conservatives. So that all feels very intentional to me and very convenient for a deep state and a, you know, U.S. government, a Biden administration that wants to see us polarized and not see us standing shoulder to shoulder like we were with regards to COVID and Ukraine, albeit it took both, it took COVID 2 years so we could get there, and Ukraine about a year before we could get there. So how long will it take with Israel-Palestine? That's a big question.
It's getting there. It's getting there. I think it went a long way to getting there over the weekend, because penny hasn't dropped yet for everybody, but it certainly will. We can discuss that at a later date, perhaps. Yeah, Boris Johnson, I don't know if you caught his drunken selfie video to social media. Not a good idea to pick up the phone and hit record after you've had a few, you know what I mean? Boris, you know, wasn't in great form. The hair was messed up. And he said, because if Ukraine fails, it will be a disaster for the West. This will put an end to the hegemony of the West, and we will have no one to blame but ourselves. He kind of said the quiet part out loud there with the true serum of English ale. Always a good one. Thank you, Boris. I can't believe he was prime minister, Hesher. That itself is quite a miracle. Yeah. I wonder who they've got lined up next. Yeah, so absolutely. And before we go, and you know, maybe we can schedule a rain check for another conversation, because there's a new war film out, but it's not about a war overseas. It's called Civil War. I know you've seen it. Have you watched it yet?
I haven't actually watched it yet, but I've been very interested in it and kind of following it since the trailers started coming out. I've seen all four trailers and a lot of reviews, and I'm keen to see it when I can make time, but I think I know what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a fictional account of a sort of a, I don't know, a deep state Democrat fan fiction apocalypse fictional account of what a Trumpian president would look like and how it could lead to a civil war. And of course, you know, the virtuous, you know, center left and lefties and patriots, I'm using my radio and video air quotes if you're on the audio feed, have to, you know, take over Washington, D.C. because, you know, Nick Offerman playing this like Trump style character. I mean, you know, AI could have written it. It's so cliche.
It's like it's a campaign movie, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of got it's got clear undertones there. Reminds me of, you know, Zelensky. They scheduled this sitcom called Servant of the People a couple of years before the Ukrainian election, where he's this bumbling school teacher who somebody caught on a hot mic when he was on a telephone having a rant to somebody. One of his students filmed it, put it on social media, and they said, this guy's great. He's the key to corruption, cleaning up corruption in Ukraine. He needs to be the next president. And lo and behold, he becomes president in the show. And after like the third season or whatever, he runs for president. And the name of his party is Servant of the People. So, I mean, that's to the extreme in terms of Veritas programming there for the public. But nonetheless, there are things embedded in this film, some themes that they've put in there to send certain messages across to the public to press buttons. And maybe we can both watch this film in the meantime, and maybe we can come back and maybe sort of deconstruct it during a segment. We could see what things you picked up in terms of programming, what things I picked up. That would, be a worthwhile segment. So I extend that invitation open to you in the future.
I'll take it. I was going to go see Dune because I know it's going to be a better movie. But I tell you what, I like this idea. So I'll go see it this weekend. Maybe we can circle back next week and discuss.
I think so. And by the way, the Dune sequel is excellent. It's well produced, but it's a cliffhanger. I think there's a part three. So again, they're just leaving us hanging for another year and a half. So I don't like these extended serials. Give me the box set. Let's have it all in one go so we can binge watch it. But they're not letting us do that. No, excellent production, Dune. I highly recommend it. If you like science fiction, which I know you do, I do as well. And it's a powerful the sound package for that film. Literally, you're shaking in the theater. It's so well designed, the Dolby and all the sort of sound effects and the music and everything. That's an incredible experience. They did an amazing job with. They should win an Academy Award for that. I don't know if they did on the last one, but they definitely deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the scale, you know, the way that they're able to show the size of, you know, the sandworms or the interstellar, you know, ships. I mean, it's really, really convincing. The visuals are really convincing, really well done.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Finally, some decent films. There's not that many of them. I'll tell you that right now. And I'm
best
really
one since Blade Runner. That series right there, best one since Blade Runner 2042 or whatever the number is on that.
Yeah. Blade Runner is another great one. Again, great soundtrack too. We're nerding out on films here. I'm with Hesher, host of State of the Nation, Brian McLean. Really appreciate you joining us here on TNT, and hopefully I will catch up to you. Be happy to come on your show and talk about what's going on with Iran and Israel. So we'll book something hopefully before the end of the week. So look forward to that.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, and stay tuned for State of the Nation. We'll be up right after the Patrick Henningsen show.
That's right, folks, coming right up. So there's going to be top of the hour news headlines coming up. We're going to wrap up the show right now. Stay on TNT. Hesher's going to be there with Tim O'Shea, State of the Nation, coming right up on the other side. And thank you very much to our guest, Gerard Felitti, attorney at the Lawfare Project, senior counsel, and also Freddie Ponton. And of course, Brian McLean, AKA Hesher, joining us. Another powerful program. Managed to hit some big issues, but wait till you see what we've got lined up tomorrow. That is going to be powerful. Stay here, folks. Tomorrow, same time, same place, and we'll have another great show lined up for you today. In the meantime, I'm Patrick Henningsen signing out. You guys have a great week, and we'll see you tomorrow as well.